James Abbott McNeil Whistler was about so much more than just his mother. The woman in white stands facing us, her long hair loose, framing her face. Her expression is blank, her surroundings indistinct. Posed before some sort of pallid curtain, she appears about as immobile as a prop on a stage. Symphony in White, number 1, The White Girl, epitomizes Whistler's departure from the established norms of the era, and perhaps is his most reviled work. When he submitted it to the 1863 Paris Salon, the jury rejected the painting, and the artist instead showed The White Girl at Napoleon III's exhibition of snubbed artwork, the Salon des Refusés. Though it certainly defied many time-honored artistic conventions and earned much derision from critics, The White Girl does show some echoes of older standards. After all, its creator had studied in Paris, learning to paint in the academic manner. Thus, it's unsurprising that in the representation of his mistress, Joanna Heffernan, Whistler opts for the customary full-scale society portrait format and reproduces her features in seemingly realistic and honest fashion. The ways in which Whistler follows his own rules, however, far outnumber the few examples of accord, and they include the painting's flattened and abstracted forms, distorted perspective, limited color palette, and penchant for decorative patterning. Though an intimate portrait, The White Girl is contrived and reveals no overarching mood or the personality of the sitter. While many of Whistler's stylistic innovations are unique to the artist, he associated himself with other artists such as Edouard Manet and Gustave Courbet, who also defied the traditions of the Academy. The influence of Théophile Gautier is also apparent. In the 1830s, Gautier stated that art need not contain any moral message or describe any narrative, as art making is an end in itself. Whistler accepted this credo, art for art's sake, wholeheartedly. In this light, The White Girl is less a faithful portrait painting and more an experimentation in color, pattern, and texture. Whistler produced many portraits of similar format in the next decade and continued to fine-tune his style and technique. In paintings such as Harmony in Gray and Green, Cicely Alexander, and Arrangement in Flesh Color and Black, Portrait of Theodore Duret, the artist exercises his need to balance the realist components of a picture with its more abstract needs, cherry-picking elements from the real world and reorganizing them in controlled, harmonious ways. Often these images feature a subdued palette, a lack of depth, unresolved backdrops, and irrational props that serve only as accents. His figures typically stand upon an unthinkably flat floor, appearing almost to hover like specters. As for Whistler's signature, it evolved to take the form of a butterfly, applied to the surface in the manner of a mere decorative element. Despite the controversy stirred when he entered the scene, Whistler won many wealthy and prestigious patrons over his career, and his portraits stand as testaments to growing interest in the radical new avant-garde approach to painting. One might say that for some artworks, seeing beyond the artist's intention to form a more indefinite, personal interpretation is, ironically, the creator's ultimate objective after all. Much like Alice stepping tentatively through the two-dimensional plane of the looking glass into the possibilities beyond, the viewer is invited to deduce his own meanings, to form his own associations, thus essentially taking part in the creative process itself. While ambiguity is standard in the conceptual contemporary pieces of today, what mattered most in early American art was that it could be read on the surface. Narrative clarity, illusionistic detail, realism, and straightforward moral instruction. When did things change? Perhaps it seems around the time the avant-garde artists began to pursue abstraction, flirt with modernism, and challenge the aesthetic standards of the past. Consider Nocturne in Gold and Black, The Falling Rocket of 1875. In the mass of shadowy dark hues, vague figures, and splashing brilliant color, museum-goers might construe a myriad of meanings from the same scene, perhaps sparks from a blazing campfire, flickering Japanese lanterns, or visions of far-off galaxies mystically appearing on a clear summer's night. Indeed, while the Massachusetts-born artist, Whistler, was inspired by a specific event, a fireworks display over London's Cremorne Gardens, the intangibility, both in appearance and theme, of the oil on panel was deliberate. The questions it conjures, the emotions it evokes, may differ from one viewer to another, and frankly, that's the point. The falling rocket resonates with many 21st century beholders, yet when it was first exhibited at a London gallery in 1877, detractors deemed the painting too slapdash, incomprehensible, even insulting. Art critic John Ruskin dismissed Whistler's efforts as flinging a pot of paint in the public's face, as in his opinion, it contained no social value. In response, Whistler, cheeky man that he was, sued Ruskin for libel, and though he won his case in court, he was rewarded only a farthing in damages. During the highly publicized trial, the artist defended his series of atmospheric nocturnes as artistic arrangements whose worth lay not in any imitative aspects, but in their basis in transcendent ideals of harmony and beauty. Whistler saw his paintings as musical compositions illustrated visually, and delineated this idea in his famed 10 o'clock lecture of 1855. Nature contains the elements in form and color of all pictures, as the keyboard contains the notes of all music. But the artist is born to pick and choose, that the result may be beautiful. As the musician gathers his notes and forms his chords until he brings forth from chaos glorious harmony.